Hello and welcome to Hello Governor, the podcast. My name is Abdullah and my guest today is the wonderful Arnie Pantroha. Am I pronouncing
it?
You
almost nailed it. Yeah, it's Pantroha.
Pantroha. Oh, sorry.
It's a difficult one.
My Spanish isn't very good. And, you know, when it comes to like Spanish sounding names, it's kind of like, how do you pronounce it again? Because I don't.
Hey, well, you know, my Spanish isn't too good either, so we're on the same grounds right now.
No, but I mean, listening to you on Big Nate, I thought your Spanish was pretty good. You know, I mean you got the accent down for that character when I'm listening to you on Big
Dude.
Nate.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate that. You know that character's kind of special to me, because my dad, as a kid, would always do this voice. Whenever we're fighting, and he'd be like, no me pegue, which means don't hit me. And so that, like, actually the voice for that character was inspired with, like, playing with my dad as a kid.
And was that, like, what made you want to get into voiceover, where it's like, you know, hey, I can do all these funny voices, and, you know, maybe I can try doing this as a career? Or was acting always something you wanted to pursue, and then voiceover came second to it?
Dude, so that's a great question. I saw in theaters Home Alone when I was a kid, and I watched Macaulay Culkin, and I don't know what that did for me, but I'm like, dude, I want to do that. My dad all my life was a radio personality. Every now and then I would come into the studio and he's like, hey, you have an hour. This is your radio time. And I would be, you know, the DJ for an hour. So I was always around that, like always familiar with like a mic. And then Radio Disney started in Dallas, Texas, and I think I was like 8 years old, and I was the first cast of Radio Disney, and that was just fun. It was just so much fun. I was getting paid nothing. I was getting paid $5.25 an hour to do like all of their promos, all like everything, and I would make like $30 a week. But I thought I was like banking at that time. So then, yeah, I went from that. I really studied hard as far as being an actor. I took these classes at this with this teacher named Kathy Lachlan, the Performer Studio Workshop, and it's like a very method based acting class. And so I did that because I mainly wanted to do on camera stuff, and then I moved out here to Los Angeles and just kind of fell into voiceover. And I think a lot of it though, I pursued it a lot because I love cartoons. I like absolutely, like it is 90% of what I watch is cartoons.
So you're like me where people ask you like, oh, well, what shows have you been watching? And they're all like animated shows. And you're just like, okay, how do I say this without sounding weird?
Hey, I've accepted it fully. I'm like, hey, I'm a grown child. And I love this stuff. this is so wild. My favorite animated show, this is like how like committed I am, is King of the Hill. Did you ever watch that one?
Oh man, I've only seen a couple episodes, but I mean, it wasn't something I didn't get into it until like years later, until like I think maybe when I was a teenager and like I had access to the episodes via like YouTube or like, or, you know, through means that I will not discuss any further for anyone listening, you know. but you know, it was one of those shows that I never watched as a kid. So it was one of those things where, and I kept hearing a lot of people say, hey, you know, this show is like really, really good. And we were really upset that it got canceled and what have you. And I'm like, okay, let's check this out. And then I, you know, I remember watching it and I'm like, you know what? I like this because it's a lot different compared to other animated sitcoms. It's not wacky. It's not over the top. It's very realistic. And I think that's what that was like, originally that was like a big turnoff for me because it wasn't like wacky, insane,
same here,
over the top stuff. But then as I got older and I started to appreciate character development a lot more, I'm like, wow, this is really good. I really like this show. And again, I'm not from Texas, but I hear from a lot of people who are from Texas. They're like, you know what? If ever there was a show I want to work on, it's King of the Hill, because that's only like that's like the best representation of Texas
Dude,
we have.
from being from Texas, I'm like, this is dead on. Like, it is so good. And I guess it just like it's wild that you say that. It was weird for me too at first, because I'm like, it's not wacky. Like, what is this? It feels like a live action show that they just animated. But like, their jokes are so good. Like, there's this one joke that like caught me later on. I actually fall asleep to King of the Hill every night. It's like my comfort thing to listen to. It's like my white noise. But like, there's this one joke where Hank is going through the mail, and he's like, "Bill, Bill, Bill." He said, "Why are we getting all of Bill's mail?" And just like, it's so like subtle. I just absolutely love that. But yeah, one other story about the show that I'm not on, that I'm like really plugging for some reason, is that the dog park I go to over here in Los Angeles, I met a guy there who he's working on the show. He worked on the show, and he was talking about how, and I thought this was so interesting, how they were so adamant against not having fart jokes on the show, that there's this scene where Bill farts with his butt stuck in this, like, trying to go down like a what are those fireman pole, and he gets stuck and just his butt's hanging out, and he farts at one moment, and it's a long squeaky fart. And it's so funny because they earned it by never having a fart joke on it. I just thought that it was a good lesson, and I suppose in smart writing.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because one of my favorite episodes is a firefighting We Will Go, where they become firemen.
Dude, that's the episode.
Yeah. And
That's the
what I love about
episode.
that episode is that there's a whole sequence where something goes wrong, and all the characters tell their events of the story,
To their point of view.
and it cuts to each person's fantasy, because it's all exaggerated. And what I love is when we get to Bill's recollection of the events, he's a loser in his own fantasy.
Yes, dude. Hey, that is my absolute favorite, that everyone, like, Hank is like stronger and more muscular. Boomhauer, you make sense when he talks. Dale has like a full head of hair. And then Bill is fatter and balder because he has low self-esteem. God, that's good. I love that you just said that right now.
I think that's my favorite episode of the entire series, because it's just such a simple premise where it's just, what if Hank and the boys were firemen for a day? And it's just, and any other sitcom, it would have been annoying. It would have been like a dumb gimmick, but that episode is just so funny. Like, that's like the perfect 22 minutes of television. Like, truly, truly.
Dude, I'm such a fan of you for knowing that. I feel like very few people would reference that episode.
Yeah, because I remember I was binge watching the show I think a year ago. I was like, I have access to the show now. It's on streaming. I'll just watch it all over again. And when I got to that episode, I'm like, man, it still to this day makes me laugh so hard. Like, it's one of those few things where every time I watch it, it's hilarious.
It's so good. So good.
And was that show your main inspiration? Like, was that the what made you want to get into voiceover specifically, or was it just like,
It is wild. I know I said I wanted to always do on-camera acting, but when I was 6 years old, I said out loud, I want to work for Nickelodeon when I'm older. I love Nickelodeon's cartoons. Ren and Stimpy. God, Ren and Stimpy was so good. Rocko's Modern Life, Doug, that really like inspired me, and it inspired me that there was a network that it was like it's for kids. Like, I felt like that was like kind of like a special thing as a kid, being like, this is for me. But like, God, I'm trying to think of what I even watched before that. I started out the cartoon I was obsessed with when I was a kid, and I had like an action figure that I like was running with, and I tripped and broke, was Voltron. As a kid, I loved Voltron. And then I started doing like Nickelodeon stuff. Oh, hey, real Real Monsters. God, that was good. And then like The Simpsons really inspired me. And then as far as anime goes, I don't know why I feel like it's so dorky that this is one of my favorite animes is Inuyasha. That I guess anime opened up like a door for me of like you can go way deeper in animation and like the story, how deep the story would go and the connections and the love stories and like getting powers. God, I love a show where people keep powering up as it goes, you know. And then like as an adult, you know, I think one of my favorite cartoons is Adventure Time, which yeah, it was just so creative and weird. But yeah, I think a lot of it started with Nickelodeon for me.
So, you know, growing up as a Nickelodeon kid, does it feel weird that you are a part of a Nickelodeon show in Big Nate? Does that feel
Dude,
real to you?
it feels awesome. I usually don't like to talk about what I do. Like it like embarrasses me to be like, or like to be like, hey, it's so cool that I do this. And this is one of the few things where I'm like, guys, I'm blown away that I'm on Nickelodeon. Like that, it's a dream come true. You go into the studio, it's got big glowing letters that say Nickelodeon on the wall. They're saying Nick. There's SpongeBob everywhere. There's his little pineapple house. It's just all of these things that I grew up watching, and you're like, I can't believe I'm actually here. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's weird. I would say it's awesome.
And how did that whole thing come about? Like, was that a general audition or was it just a callback?
You know, that's interesting is that I had been auditioning for Nickelodeon for years. And this is actually kind of how I fell into voiceover is that, God, I'm going to butcher his last name. There's a casting director named Gene Vassalero. And he, when I met him, he was doing on camera casting. And he was a casting associate. And he was casting stuff like American Pie, like Six, and like casting like kind of a more, you know, off the mainstream projects. And I would go in and have just a blast. I would do some really weird stuff in those auditions. And I some stuff that normally like one I was supposed to be a Stephen Hawking type character, and so I rented a wheelchair and I had my friend I bought scrubs and had him in scrubs and had him bring me into the room. That's like very I'm surprised they didn't make me just go away because that's very unusual. But he ended up getting a job at Nickelodeon, and years later I got an audition for Nickelodeon. I'm like, how is this possible? Like for voiceover. And it was him. And he was a huge advocate of me. And he actually ended up helping me get my agent, which is just one of the kindest things anybody's ever done for me, to go out of his way to help me get an agent. And yeah, and I probably went into the studio at least 30 times auditioning for different roles, never getting anything. And right before the pandemic, I got an audition for Big Nate. So it usually starts with you record at home, and then if you get a call back, you go into the studio. And so I got an audition to record at home, and I sent my agent. And this is like one of the very few times that I did this, where I'm like, I didn't do the audition because I had completely lost my voice. I actually wonder if I had COVID before we knew about COVID, but like I've never completely lost where nothing was coming out when I would talk. And it was like for like a month. And so I didn't do the audition. And then like a month or so later, I got an email from my agent being like, hey, you got a call back for that thing you didn't audition for. And I'm like, what? And I guess they knew me over there at Nick. So I went in and I had a lot going on in my life. So this is one of the few times where I didn't even prepare. I like sat in my car, I looked over the sides for the audition, like 10 minutes before, went in, improvised a bunch and had fun, and then found out like a couple weeks later that I booked it.
So it was just one of those things where, okay, this is weird. Are you sure they want me? Are you sure you want
Yeah.
me specifically?
Yeah, it was shocking. You know what's weird is that it was so easy. There's a lot of times in this industry where I've booked things And it's like, shot. I'm like, wait, that was it? Like, I just did that once and I booked it? Because I've had other stuff where it's like, you're coming in for the fourth audition, and now they want you to do this, and now they want, and you're like, it feels like you're like passing some sort of like Jedi test. And it's just wild that this one was that easy. But I think that's honestly a lot to do with the genius of our director and showrunner, Mitch Watson. Like he knows what he wants and he goes for it.
And how does it feel playing what is essentially like one of the few sane characters in this universe?
One of the few sane characters.
Yeah, I mean, because when you think about it, Teddy is like is that guy who's like, I don't know, man, this is kind of a bad idea, but Nate goes with it.
Yeah. You know, that is interesting. I've actually never looked at Teddy like that. I feel like, I feel like Teddy is the type of person who just like kind of goes with the flow of things and doesn't look into it too deeply. Or get pulled into anything too deeply, but like it was fun playing him. It was a lot of fun. I just saw an episode of it the other day too, because it's wild. You record these a year and a half before it is even animated, it comes out, and so when you watch it, you're like, I completely forgot I did that. And it was wild watching some of the Teddy stuff, where I had some like deeper scenes, in that. Where I'm like having like I'm talking to my mom and it's this, I don't want to be this math dork. And it reminded me so much of my childhood. Cause as a kid, I was forced to go into the quote unquote gifted program. And I'm like, but I don't want to be with all those nerds. I want to be with my friends. And, turns out I am a nerd. And one other thing that I'm really proud of with Big Nate is that my writing partner, Ben Giroux, plays Nate. Coincidentally, he and I both got cast in that. And he and I see each other Monday through Friday and we write. But there's a song that he and I wrote for the show that made it into it. And the song started out about 8 years ago when I worked in a restaurant. I made up the song in Spanish to entertain the cooks. And also, like, they would give me my food faster if they liked me. And because they would call me Bigotito, which means little mustache man. So I made up the song where I'm like, me llamo Bigotito, nada que necesito. And they ended up using that song in an episode of Big Nate.
That's awesome. Just like improvising something on the fly and someone hears it and it's like, yep, that's making it into the show.
Yeah. Dude, it was actually wild. To me, it's one of the biggest examples of like all creativity is purposeful and has a meaning, and it's not a waste. There's always there's positivity that often comes from even being creative in the most mundane situations.
I know that you also do a lot of anime, and most of your work is anime, and I'm kind of wondering like when you booked Big Nate. Was it hard to go from anime to prelay, or was there no difference?
No. Are you saying was it hard to do like an original record like Big Nate versus doing anime?
I mean, was there a difference between like the recording styles? Where because with dubbing, it's like you have 100%. To match for picture and what have you, and Big Nate is
100%. Yeah, it's so different. You know. I like the creativity of the original original animation. I like knowing that like my imagination is the limit and I can influence how it's going to be animated. It's so wild to even like you can put movement in it and they'll animate it to that with your voice. So like I could be like, hey guys, let's go. Or I could be like, hey guys, let's go. And like they'll draw that differently. I can even improvise stuff. You don't really get to improvise a lot in like anime, but like I can improvise things and that'll make it into it. It's wild watching. I just cut a reel together of my work and it was wild watching. I would say 70% of the stuff that's in my reel, I'm like, oh my God, I improvised that. But anime, it's different too, because you take a lot from the original source, like the original Japanese, and you're supposed to try to adhere to their performance as much as possible. And that's really difficult for me because I find myself wanting to go like, well, what if we did this, and going off. So I don't know if that irritates directors much that I'm always trying to add stuff in, but in this anime Konosuba that I'm in, I definitely add a lot into that and try to get away with as much as possible. But yeah, original animation, I feel like the sky's the limit with your creativity. And I feel the anime and dubbing, it's a different challenge of seeing how creative you can be within a box, within the confines of the timing and the original Japanese performance.
Because it's a different beast altogether, and that's why like a lot of voice actors, when they start doing anime, it's a good way to get into to cut your teeth, as they say, because it's like it teaches you everything you need to know about voiceover. It's like, okay, create a character, do a voice, give a good performance in a short amount of time. If you can do all those three things, you're golden, you know, basically.
Yeah, and you know what, man? Like, also, there's something to be said that I actually really felt was powerful of you get to see your performance animated instantly. So instead of me waiting a year and a half to see what it looked like when I did a line as Teddy, I get to see it instantly as they match it to picture. And so then you get to understand, you're like, wow, I thought that I sounded way more aggressive in that take, but I actually, it doesn't match up at all. And so it gets to instantly show you what you think you're doing and what actually happens so that you can, you know, meet in the middle and actually perform what you're intending to perform. So that was incredibly helpful.
And out of all the characters you voiced, which one would you say was the toughest?
The toughest to voice? Hey, I gotta say, Teddy is a little difficult for me because I pitch up my voice with like, you know, like I'm like talking like this and I'm like, and whatnot. And it's high enough to where I find that sometimes I'm restricted a little bit with with my vocal range of like how high up and how low I can go with it. And I have found that has been something I've wrestled with Big Nate, of being like, hey, like how do I have just like a quiet scene with Teddy? You know, does it sound still like Teddy, or is my voice going down too low? So I think that has been like a challenge. Yeah. Finding depth in that character.
And also, like, you know, you're playing a lot younger, you know, because again, he's how old is he? He's like a little boy. So it's like, you got to make sure that he sounds like a little boy and not like a 40 something year old man.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think I think they're in sixth grade. I want to say it's either fifth or sixth. But yeah, no, 100%.
And I think that's usually difficult because, and also it's rare because not a lot of men do boys' voices. Usually they get women to do that because women's voices are much more raspier when it comes to boy voices. So it's very rare do you see like grown men do boys' voices. But I think Big Nate is one of those few exceptions where you have, you know, like you said, Ben as the lead character who's also a little boy, and you and Charlie.
And Charlie too.
Yeah, and Charlie. So it's interesting because I don't see that a lot when it comes to animation. Because with animation, it's like, oh, we can just get kid actors, or it's all women doing the voices.
No, it's Charlie's Chad character absolutely kills me. Gotta love that character. Hey, I found this is weird. Is that everyone in the cast that is doing like a young character, we're all like under 5'4" or like I'm 5'4" and like, we're all like smaller men. And I don't know if having our frame and like size ends up like reflecting how we end up sounding, and we can sound younger before that. But I was just noticing that's, we don't have anyone who's like 6 foot in there doing like little kids' voices.
I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, I don't know how tall anybody is with voiceover. It's like they
Yeah.
could be like, what do you mean? Like Roger Craig Smith isn't like 6 feet tall. Come on, man. But I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's just something I noticed because, like I said, when it comes to as someone who watches a lot of cartoons, man, I
Yeah.
noticed that nowadays it's usually we can get kid actors. And or if it's or it's just women, but it's very rarely do you see like grown men play like little boys
Yeah.
unless their voice is like really high and they can do it. So
Yeah.
it's
Yeah,
interesting.
that is it's a great observation.
This is the type of shit I pay attention to where it's like, yeah, you ever think about how weird it is? Because I remember talking to someone and she was like, you ever think how weird it is like we've just accepted that women can just do boy voices? You ever think that? Don't you think that's weird? Don't you think that's weird?
Hey, that is a little strange, huh? I also though feel like the times are changing where in the animation world they want people to represent like to actually represent what they're doing. So like they're men, at least at Nickelodeon, like men aren't allowed to do women's voices. And it's I think it's coming to the point too where it's like, yeah, men do men's voices, women do women's voices. Like your ethnicity affects like who you can play, like as far as like, Teddy is Mexican. He's Mexican and Puerto Rican. He's half Mexican, half Puerto Rican. I'm half Mexican. So like it's like, okay, like you can play this type of character and whatnot. So it's more actually representing the culture and whatnot. So it's definitely changing.
And I like that. I like seeing more diversity in the casting, and
Me too.
it's not just, hey, let's get a bunch of white people and ask them, hey, can you do a black voice?
Yeah, actually, I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Because it's shocking how going back to old cartoons and listening to some performances, and they're like, oh, that was a white guy? Oh
Yeah.
boy.
Yeah. It feels uncomfortable, doesn't it? Like, ooh.
I know when they switched over when after the George Floyd protests, I know that The Simpsons switched a
Hank
couple ca
Azaria,
yeah as Hank stepped down and Harry Shearer stepped down from doing Hibbert. And I know a lot
yeah.
of people were weirded out by that at first, where they're like, oh, I don't know how I feel about Kevin Michael Richardson and the other guy that they got doing Carl now. And I wanted to say
Oh
it's
wait, they have
weird.
Kevin Michael Richardson does
Yeah, he's Hibbert now.
Carl?
No, he's Hibbert. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Hey,
he's Hibbert.
I love Kevin.
Yeah, I mean he's also on Big Nate and he's great and
Yeah.
he's amazing and like he's good in everything he does.
He's phenomenal in everything he does. That guy and his voice, man. Like the voices he can do and like how like raspy like I had a session with him on Trolls actually a while ago and he like they're like, "Hey, we want you guys to have like similar tones in this." And I'm like, there's no way I can do what he does. And like how he does, I'm like, how do you not lose your voice all the time? But okay, you were saying, I'm sorry though, you were saying
No, I
when
was
the
just about to
Simpsons.
say, like, I think that it's quote unquote sounds weird because we were so used to these characters being voiced by white men that hearing people of color in those roles sounds weird because, oh no, it suddenly that realization hits. It's like, oh shit, it's authentic. I don't know how I feel about that now, you know?
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
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 I mean, it's just something I noticed because it's like, and you hear it. You hear it. You can tell if it's like a white guy
Yeah.
doing a voice, or if it's a black guy. You know, you can tell.
Yeah.
Even it's funny because I remember listening to a podcast and with a host who was a person of color, and he was like, "Yeah, even as a kid, I just knew. Like listening to Kevin Michael Richardson and Phil Lamar, I knew that those dudes were black. You know, you could tell
Yeah.
their voices have that texture."
Yeah, that richness.
And I also want to talk about something else that you've been in. I think more people will probably be familiar with, which is Final Fantasy. Like
Yeah.
how did you land Reno in the remake? I gotta know.
Hey man, I tell the story because it kind of blows my mind. This is again one of those moments where it was too easy. I get a bunch of auditions throughout the week and go in my closet, I record them, send them off, and expect to hear nothing back from them. I've done thousands of auditions. And this was one, it was just a sheet, just one page. Didn't say anything, said it was it was a video game and they had a code name. What was the code name? It had a code name that was nothing like Final Fantasy. And did it, like, read through it and sent it in, didn't even spend a lot of time on it, sent it in, forgot about it. I think like a year later, my agent's like, hey, you booked this job. And I'm like, what job? And I had to like go back and even listen to what I did because I'm like, I don't remember this at all. And she's like, hey, your session is at is this Friday from 8 p.m. to midnight. And I'm like, wait, are you serious? Like, this feels, it felt like a drug deal. I've never had a voiceover session that late. Turns out we were on with Japan. So we, like, you know, the time difference. And I got there, I did the session, and I still had no idea what it was for. And it wasn't until the second session where, like, this is Final Fantasy, and it blew my mind. Especially since I watched my brother play the whole Final Fantasy VII as a kid. It felt so amazing just to get to be a part of that. But yeah, that's again one of those where it's shocking how easy it was, and it's such a huge project. And I really just feel honored to be a part of that.
Yeah, because it's, again, it's Final Fantasy, it's a remake, and it's Final Fantasy VII. It's the most beloved part of the entire franchise. And
yeah,
like, I can't imagine going into those sessions was easy for you, because like, there must have been a lot of pressure. There must have been a lot of pressure.
You know, I really think a gift was I had no idea what it was about. I had no idea what it was for at first. So then I just did myself. I did what I would have done. And I think now that you're saying that, if I knew I was going in there and like, hey, this is Final Fantasy, because I think even the first record that I did for that was almost like the callback. Like, there was a chance that they would have just fired me and said, this is not the right guy. So it's wild to me. Yeah, I really think it helped me to not know what it was. Because then once I knew, we were deep enough into it where I knew the character, I knew what I was doing, I had a relationship with the director, and so now it felt comfortable. But you're right. I think if I went in there knowing what it was, I think I would have been a little bit more nervous.
And I remember rewatching the boss fight from Final Fantasy, the remake of the Reno boss fight on YouTube a couple days ago for research purposes. And I got to say, I love your laugh as Reno. I love his laugh. He's just so cocky and arrogant.
Dude, I appreciate that, man. I'm so proud of that laugh, dude. That, like, you know, like, the, you're going to bullshit me. Yeah, like, I that laugh is like key to Reno for me. Like, that is like Reno. Like, it's wild, it's unhinged. Yeah.
And have you gotten a chance to meet any of your fellow castmates from that game? Because I know that you guys record separately, and you know, seeing as it's a big game, have you gotten a chance to work with any of your other castmates on other projects?
Not work with them on other projects, but I've met them at like events, like William. Like, I've met all the Turks. They actually hosted here. It was really neat. The symphony in I forget what symphony it is in downtown. Every year they play the music from Final Fantasy, and they, while they're like, have like the video on a projector, and they play the music to it. It's so cool. But a lot of the cast was there, and I met a lot during that.
That's pretty cool. I mean, what was your reaction to meeting everyone for the first time? Was it like weird? Was it awkward? Was it like, oh, you don't know me, but I voiced this character.
Hey, that is kind of like the weird thing, like too, like, hey, I'm Reno. Hey, and I don't know if I just don't come off as a Reno in real life because everyone's always like, you're Reno? Like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? Yeah, everyone's actually super kind. It's like, I find that like the video game and like anime crowd, I feel comfortable around them because I find that we're all like these kind of just like animation nerds. And so like it's like, oh, I'm in good company with these people.
Yeah, man. Every time I talk to a voice actor, they're like, "Look, man, we're not the cool people. We're the freaking nerds. Come on, man." You know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're nerds. Like, it's like a majority of everyone I meet is pretty dorky. In a cool way. I mean, I actually think if you really just honestly, like, unapologetically be yourself, and even if it is nerdy, like, this is me, I actually think that makes you cool. Of just being like, no, this is me. I accept it.
Yeah, I mean, own it. Own it. You know, don't
Yeah.
hide from it. Don't I? Because I don't like. Because I've interviewed a bunch of people, and one of the things I don't like is I can tell if someone's being fake and or they're not being
Oh, yeah.
honest or they're putting on like a facade, and I'm like, I don't like that, man. Can't you just be you? Like, you know, can't I don't want to talk to the brand. I want to talk to the person. Because I'll tell you right now, your brand is shit and I have no interest in it. I want to talk to the person, you know?
Your brand is shit and I have no interest in it. Yeah, how am I coming off? Fairly fake? Do you see my brand right now? Shit. Hey. That's wild, though. That's wild to hear that.
I mean, not to throw shade on anybody, but like you can tell sometimes though, where everyone's like trying to be like way too professional and way too corporate, and I'm like, I don't like that. You know, can we just like let's just have a conversation, let's have fun. You know, let's have fun with it. You know, because we're nerds. Come on,
Yeah.
man.
I wonder if that's there's sometimes I get questions about things, and I wonder if this is ever slightly that of like, where they're like, hey, what'd you think about this? And I'm like, about a project, I'm like, oh my God, I haven't played that. I actually don't even know the answer to that. I'm like, make something up so you don't sound stupid.
I love those types of questions because I don't know what it is about those types of questions, but it's funny to me because it's like, why are you assuming that a voice actor knows this stuff? Like, why are you assuming like this technical thing? Like,
Yeah.
why would they know this? Because I remember when I interviewed Roger Craig Smith back in like 2020, and he was talking about Apex Legends. He would talk about people coming up to him, asking him about like tech related questions, and he's like, guys, I'm just the voice actor. I don't, you
Yeah,
know,
I have no idea.
like, why are you asking me this? I don't know.
That's great.
And because it's just so weird to me. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's cool to have a voice actor who's like a fan of the work and, you know, who knows the
Yeah.
lore and the ins and outs, but I don't expect them to know everything. Come on, guys, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that
Yeah.
old it's like that old Simpsons bit where it's like how do you get past the dungeon without using the wizard's key, and Homer's like, what the hell are you talking about?
I love that.
But yeah, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, I mean, again, like I love talking to voiceover actors because again, you guys are all nerds and you're all geeky, and it's like I feel like I'm among my people. I don't feel like I have to pretend like, oh, I know. I am normal. I am John Everyman. I am normal. I watch the football or something like
I watch the football.
that. I don't know, man. Like, because every time I've been to the States, I notice like you guys are just way too obsessed with football, and it's kind of like, is this a religion? Is this like some sort of weird religion?
It basically is here. Yeah. I mean, I'm not really into sports, so like I'm right there with you where like it's like my family, I'm the weird one in my family for not being like a huge Chiefs fan.
Going back to Final Fantasy, like, you know, what are some of your favorite lines as Reno?
You know, one, I just love the laugh. I love the laugh is one of my favorite things. And I do love the, and it's in the first one, like, the, hey, this is nothing personal, bitch. Like, I love that. I love the bitch in there. Like, I just think that's so, yeah, I think that's one of my favorite lines of his.
That's such a Jesse Pinkman read. I don't know why that reminds me so much of Jesse Pinkman, where it's like, yeah, bitch.
I actually, a lot of people told me I sound like him, which I can't hear it. But a lot of Mr. White, yeah, bitch. Yeah, bitch. Yeah, it is a very Jesse Pinkman, though.
I mean, hey, man, that's a compliment. I would take that as a compliment. It's like, oh, I sound like one of the best actors of our generation. I will take that as a compliment, sir. No, but I love Urino because, you know, you get him. You know, he's like, he's just a cocky asshole, and that's all he needs to be. He needs to be a cocky asshole who gets his ass kicked. And even when he gets his ass kicked, he's like, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Get them.
Yeah, man. And I think that is one of, like, that is one thing I really appreciate about Reno, is I don't normally get to play characters like that. And, like, it's fun getting to tap into that part of me that is, like, that is, you know, we're talking about being nerds and dorky, but that, like, that is, like, the cool part of me. That, like, you know, that, like, yeah, like, it has that, like, more, like, I don't care. Like, it, like, you know what I mean? I don't, like, it, like, that, like, it's just something I don't normally get to play, so I really appreciated getting to, like, explore that side.
I don't know, man, because I know that your character on what was that show's name? Konosuba. Konosuba. He's very pervy, and I'm kind of like wondering, like, how do you get into that mindset of, like, a massive pervert?
I just remember being a teenager. Hey, that character, you know, like, is extreme, but that character, I would say, is the closest to me out of all of my characters. Like, mine is, like, the pervert, like, stuff, but, like, but still, like, he, like, God, that character is the close, like, it is the most, I think, I put myself into a character of just, like, just how he is, just his whole persona. Like, I love Cosmo. Kazuma might be my favorite character I've ever played. God, he's cool. I love that guy.
Also, you know that you're doing a good job when the people who don't like the English dub are like, you know what, this dub isn't so great, but the main character's okay. It's like,
oh, yeah. Is that the word on the street?
It's like people are like, the dub is okay. You know, the Aqua's okay and the main character is okay. I think those are the only two good comments I found when regarding the dub.
Oh, really? Huh? Hey, I think that's a win because usually people hate the dubs, right?
Yeah, because I made this joke every time I interview an anime person where it's like, you know, you've made it as an anime voice actor when someone's complaining about you online.
Hey, I think though that's, yeah, I have heard people be like, hey, they really enjoyed the dub for that, for Konosuba, which to me is such a compliment. And I wonder if they can hear, like, I'm truly having fun when I do those recordings. And I hope that comes through. Like, cause like I'm having the time of my life. Like, you should see us in the booth when we're recording those. Like, we are dying laughing at moments. God, there's this scene in that we could not stop laughing. There was two. One was, it's like at the end of season one. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch the show. If not, I recommend it highly. But there's the end of season one, this lich, like, she needs to, we're trying to stop this bomb that's about to go off. And she looks at me and she's like, Kazuma, can I suck it? And I'm like, yes. Absolutely. It's just so extreme. Absolutely. I'm not going to ask what or when or how because I'm not so-and-so, but yes, suck away. And she sucks out my power and drains my energy so she can stop this stuff. But like, there's something about the earnest and the eagerness that absolutely kills me with that. And we could not stop laughing. And then there's also, and I think this was in the movie, we couldn't stop laughing when... when this ogress, she's like trying to take advantage of me and she like pulls my shorts down and I'm just in my underwear and I do this scream, and we could not stop laughing with it. Like, it was so just like pathetic and vulnerable. I mean, I've cried laughed in those sessions before. Like, it's I hope people enjoy it because I'm having the time of my life while doing it.
Yeah, because from I remember watching the show, and it's been a while since I've seen it, so my memory's not that great. So, you know, it's been a while because it's God, it's been like almost a what was it like? I think it was around 2019 or so. And you know, honestly, like the past 4 years have been kind of a blur to me, quite honestly, because it's like
Same here.
I remember half the shit I've seen or done. So. Please excuse me, but from what I remember, what I love about the dub is like you can tell everyone's having a lot of fun with it, like because they know it's dumb, they know this is like a comedy show and they're playing it for the comedy, and you know, and it's fun, you know, it is a fun show.
I always describe it as Always Sunny in Philadelphia meets an anime.
I mean, it's basically like, hey, you know, think of like every perverted teenage sex comedy from the 80s, but make that into an anime, and there you go. That's pretty much this show.
Exactly.
And another character you voiced that I don't hear a lot of people talk about because it was on a show that did not sadly last long was Glitchtex. You voiced the
Oh,
Nameless.
yeah. That's wild that you're bringing that up. Which I wish it lasted longer because I think my character was going to be coming back.
And I'm kind of wondering, like, with that character, did you have to go lower for your voice, or was it just like your normal speaking voice, but they just pitched it down for that character?
You know, they did pitch it. I want to say they pitched it down. I'm trying to, God, that was a while ago. I'm trying to remember, you know. Yeah, I feel like I was more like talking like this, maybe like a slight, like slightly like lower register. But they did go in and like and pitch it, and you know and put it through a filter because I'm talking through a mask. Man, I wish that would have gone longer because I really enjoyed playing that guy. That like, God, you know what's weird? I was cutting together my reel, and I feel like I'm a fairly happy-go-lucky guy, and I was shocked with how many dicks I play. I was like, man, this guy's an asshole. And like I like over and over again I saw that. And like it sort of made me question like, who am I? But yeah, Nameless was kind of a jerk.
I love that the episode title is The Real Glitchtex, which is an homage to the real Ghostbusters, which I like. Yes.
That is great, huh?
No, but I mean, he's not a bad guy, he's just an asshole. I mean, 'cause again, he's part of the rival group, but they're not bad guys, they're just rival groups. But again, you know, you watch that episode and you're like, man, this dude's an asshole. But I mean, like playing all these like vile characters, like how do you get into that mindset? Like how do you find the humanity in those characters?
That's a great question. One, a villain or a bad guy or whatnot, they don't see themselves as that. They don't see they're doing the right thing. They're doing what needs to be done. And so there's one of that of like not judging the character. Also the acting, the process that I was taught with the acting was very method based. And a lot of very method is it's basically when you're doing a character, you're not acting like the character, you're finding that part of you inside of you that could do that, that could murder someone, that part of you that, you know, could be like extraordinarily religious, that could be or whatnot. And there's tricks of how to make that come out. And so a lot of these characters, I access the part of me that could be like this. Because we all have that in us. We all have the potential to be a jerk. We all have the potential to be a hero, and it's really finding that part of you and really like indulging in it, if that makes sense at all.
And do you watch any of the stuff you're in, or can you not stand listening to yourself?
You know, I do watch this stuff. I think I can't stand watching myself, but listening, I don't know what it, if the fact that it's like animated or whatnot, like it doesn't. I enjoy it. I've watched I watch all of Konosuba. I love Konosuba. Watched a bunch of Big Nate. I haven't yet played Final Fantasy because I have a Nintendo Switch, so I'm waiting for it to come out on the Switch. But like, I'm 100% gonna play that, and I can't wait to fight myself. I actually don't. It's not like I sit here and obsess and I watch it over and over again, but I get kind of a kick out of it.
So there's never that point where you're watching something and you're like, oh, I'm too hypercritical. And I'm like, oh, I don't like that read. I don't like that line or whatever.
You know what? I actually am more in awe, like more shocked. I'm like, I did that? Like, I don't. A lot of times when I get behind the mic and I'm acting, I think I'm going to realize it's almost like I go someplace else. And so I'm slightly surprised with what comes out, especially if they're like, hey, Arnie, if they let me improvise, like, depending on the character and if I get into the character, like, I'll say things that I'm surprised I'm saying. And it's because the character would say it. But, like, I mean, it sounds almost like I'm being, like, possessed by something. And it is almost in the sense of that, of, like, I'm channeling that character and it's almost like they're talking through me. So it is kind of wild to watch some stuff and I'm like, wait, that's me? I did that?
So it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, when did I do this?
Yeah. That's like, the other voice actors say that as well?
Not really, because every time I ask that question, people always say like they don't watch any of the stuff they're in because they're too hypercritical, or they don't search it out unless they're a fan of a specific thing, or they do watch it and they don't mind.
Yeah.
But usually, like, because again, usually when someone gets older, they'll probably, like, you know, not remember as the stuff they did like a couple years ago. So I'll make an exception to that. But I think you're the first guy I've talked to who's like, you know, I don't remember most of the stuff I do, and I'm kind of shocked by it. But that's great. I mean, because again, like I said, like every time I ask that question, people are like, oh, I don't watch any of my stuff because I'm too hypercritical. I'm like, man, you're so lucky that you work in an industry where a lot of fans will bring up important plot points. Otherwise, you'd be like lost when it comes to
stuff. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I'm shocked. Like, there's so many people that just don't watch their own stuff, and I'm like, but why? It's a good show. Why aren't you watching?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it feels weird to me. Because like, if I worked on something like a King of the Hill or like a Final Fantasy or something like that, and I would wear that as a badge of honor. I'm like, yep, like hell yeah, I was that character. You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is wild.
But yeah, I mean, it's, I guess that's the actor's mind where they're just like, they're just constantly like overanalyzing everything, and they're just like, I need to stop doing that.
Hey, that really is, man. It is. It's taken me a while to like learn to let things go. I'm like working on, I'm writing like a book right now. And I talk about acting, and as like, you know, the acting process, what did I say? Yeah, the acting process, it takes like 72 hours for an audition. It's like 1 hour of waiting, you know, 59 minutes of waiting, 1 minute to do the audition, and then 71 hours hating yourself for all the things you did wrong in that one minute. like sitting there like, why did I do that? Why did I say that? Why did I? And it's taken a while for me just to let it go, to do something and be like, all right, it's done. Now what? It's actually taken me decades to get to that point.
It's a trial and error process. I mean, as with everything in life, there is no, like, very rarely do you get something perfect on the first go. Very rarely. And even if you do, like, what are the chances you'll get that again? Like, it's the trial and error. It's the human condition, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's not even, it's the, I think as a kid, I loved math. And it took me forever to realize that there's no right answers when it comes to acting. And there is no perfect. There is just what is true to the moment. And so I think the moments that I've let go and stopped trying to be perfect, I think that has like been a lot of growth in my career.
Because if you linger on too much on anything, you'll never improve. And I've learned that the hard way as well, where
Yeah.
it's like re-listening to old episodes and thinking, man, I should have said this, I should have said that,
Yeah.
or when I'm rereading a lot of old scripts that I wrote years ago, I'm like, man, I should have done this differently, I should have done that differently. Oh well. But I learn from it. It's like with everything, it's just, hey, it happened. There, you can't really do much about it. Move on to the next thing. Keep moving forward. I'm a firm believer in that you have to keep moving forward, otherwise you'll never go anywhere.
Yeah, you have to. And a lot of that's letting go. Because if you're holding on to something in the past, you can't move. You're holding on to it. You're stuck there.
Yeah, and it's, let me tell you, man, a lot of people are like, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And I'm like, look, man, learning to let go of something that means a lot to you is like one of the genuinely one of the hardest things you can do as a human being, genuinely. And I'm talking from experience, because learning to let go of anything is just, it feels like impossible, but once you do, you'll be a lot better off for it. Trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm getting existential now, where it's
I know.
like
I love it.
that's what people want to listen to me talk about, like existentialism.
That's what I'm interested in. That's actually why I like acting. Like a lot of people I know, they get into acting, they want to be famous, so they want to do this. And I liked it because you get to learn a lot about yourself. You get to explore avenues of your being that you would normally not. And I by that teacher, that Kathy Lachlan teacher, would say, show me, she's like, let show me a block on stage and I'll show you a block in your life. Like, if you can't do it on stage, then you can't do it in life. And if you can't do it in life, then you can't do it on stage. And so if you're uncomfortable being intimate with someone in real life, when you get on stage, you're going to be uncomfortable being intimate with someone. And so it's wild what you can work through and what you can discover about yourself with acting.
I don't remember who exactly said this, but I remember listening to an interview with someone and they said, like, oh, you feel uncomfortable acting? Good. Acting is supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. It is about being
Oh yeah.
uncomfortable. It is about
Yeah, that's great.
being vulnerable in a moment that it's about being vulnerable to the world, basically.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
about showing the world that you can play these characters and not judge them. It's about showing the audience, like, hey, I know I'm playing this terrible character, but I will not judge him. I will not judge her or whoever.
Yeah.
He is me and I am them.
And I was gonna say the best acting is when you're not playing. This is just when you are. You're being, you're exposing yourself. And it's extraordinarily vulnerable and it's painful. Whenever I've cried doing a scene, like I'm not pretending to cry, I'm actually crying and like actually hurt. And so that's it's a very vulnerable place to go.
And what was the best and worst piece of advice you've ever been given as an actor?
Best and worst. One of the best was don't have a backup plan. Kathy used to say that all the time. If you have a backup plan, you're going to go to it right away. She's like, because it's hard. You have to be insane to want to be an actor, because it's a struggle. And if you have like, I'm going to school to be a chiropractor too, it's like, then you're just going to be a chiropractor because it's too hard. Worst advice. You know what? There's every now and then I've had stuff where I've been represented by people and they want you to get coaching before going into an audition. And I hate that. I'm like, why am I paying someone to tell me how to be me, to tell me what to do? Like, that's like you, yeah, you don't tell Picasso like how to paint, what to do. He just does it. Like, why do I want to pay? So I actually think ever doing that was at like some of the worst direction and advice I've gotten from people, because I think it's silly.
Especially if like you're like this late into your career and they're still like, oh, you should take coaching on this. It's like, Why can't my quality of work speak for itself? That's what I hate about where the industry is going in. It's like it feels like everything is like being very corporate. It feels like everything's being corporate, where it's like, oh, we love what you did here, but we think you can improve on this or that. And it's like, that's fine, but then it's like, oh, but we have X a few notes, and then it's a few more notes, and then a few more notes, and then it becomes like this entire textbook of notes. And it's like, and you just want to say, who the hell are you to tell me this?
I agree.
Because I've worked in, I've, worked office jobs, and it's like, oh, okay, we only got a couple notes, and it's like, okay, cool. And then it just becomes more and more and more, and they become bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm like, okay, just tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it. Like,
Or maybe you should do it.
and I've had this before, and I get it, like, no one likes being criticized, but if you're doing anything, you have to learn to deal with criticism. I don't care if it's like, if it's just an office job or an actor or whatever, you have to learn to deal with criticism. Otherwise, you are not going to get better at your craft if you don't know how to deal with criticism.
Yeah, and that improv helped me with that a lot. Because the number one rule of improv is yes and. So take something someone says and then add to it. And like because if you look in life, a lot of people know but a lot of stuff in life. And you can just see even conversation, how that stops the conversation, how it stops momentum, stops things from moving forward. So I'll take someone's note and I'll yes and it. And usually I'll end up finding something great from it. Every now and then we'll yes and it to the point where I'm like, hey, it's just not working. But that's very rare.
And you have to be good on the spot as well, like, as an actor, like, because you're gonna be given, like, this is what the scene, especially like with anime, it's like, okay, this is what the scene is, this is what your character's doing, go. Like, there's you don't have you don't have enough time to think,
Especially with anime, you're right. Especially, like, you don't even know what the project is a lot of times. You're like, hey, you're coming in to do this project. Okay.
I mean, you have to be on your toes as well. Like, you have to be on your toes, ready for anything, and you gotta be hungry. You gotta be hungry. You gotta freaking want it, man. Otherwise, like, what are you doing this for?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be insane because it's really difficult. Literally, there's got to be no other option for you. Like, it's something you have to do. I often said I knew I wouldn't fail in this industry because I wouldn't give up. So I'd either succeed or die, but I wouldn't fail.
And you mentioned like you're doing more writing. Like, what is your writing process like?
It depends on what we're writing. My writing partner and I meet up Monday through Friday and we write for 4 hours. We're currently, God, I wonder how much I can say about this. We're currently a year into developing a cartoon with a network. And that has been a wild process. Right now we're interviewing artists to like start drawing our like what we're developing. And I got a really good feeling that the next time I talk to you, I'll be show running a cartoon of my own. And I'm super excited about it. But like yeah, it depends. Usually we start with something and we over coffee laugh about, see what makes us interest us, what makes us laugh, what we want to work on, and then we start trying to get a good idea, and then from there we just expand. What else could be? What And I'm very grateful that my writing partner is way more organized than I am. So he provides the structure. He often says that he feels that his job is 60% of his job is keeping me on track. And I feel 60% of my job is trying to take him off track so that we oddly even each other out.
But what if we do this? No, that doesn't work, Arnie. Keep stay in your lane, stay in your lane. Don't crash.
Exactly, man. Exactly. Have you been writing with me?
No, man, as a former writer, I know the feeling. Like, you're constantly like being like, I have this idea and I want to do it, but then another idea pops into your head, but it's like, oh, but what if we do this instead? It's like, and you try to make it work, and it's like, but this is really terrible. I don't care. I want to do it, you know? No, man, I love the writing process. It's a lot of fun. And, I kind of wish that, I could interview more writers, but, when it comes to writers, like a lot of times they're just like, I don't like talking about the process. It's
Hey, that
like,
is interesting, isn't it? I'm intrigued by the differences in the arts of the people. I've been hanging out with a friend who's a musician, Emily Brimlow, and she her music's awesome. I hang out with her and her musician friends, and it's so wild to hang out with them compared to actors, because I'm like, wow, everyone actually listens like when you talk. And they're not like trying to outdo each other with a joke or something like that. And they're very sensitive, and sincere. And it's interesting. Writers I have found are often like kind of neurotic, and aren't very talkative. And like they're like kind of like, yeah, when you said like, hey, they don't like to talk, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, because I did try reaching out to various writers, and I usually don't get responses, and the ones that I do got responses were just like, look, man, what you do is great, but I don't feel comfortable talking about my
Yeah.
process. And it's like, okay, cool. Yeah.
That's wild.
But I mean, you never know. I mean, you never know with people. And yeah, that's why I love listening to commentaries with writers, because I love listening to them talk about the writing process, because it's so rare. Just so rare
Yeah.
to hear writers talk about their process, and I'm like, oh, this is what this is like. It's like heroin for me. It's like this is injected into my veins. But yeah, but before we wrap this up, can you give us an update on what
Yeah.
you're currently working on, and where can people find you online?
What am I currently working on that I can give you an update on? Well, we got more Big Nate coming out for y'all. Oh God, I don't have more Big Nate coming out for y'all. Honestly, I'm really excited when this cartoon that we're developing comes out. Keep your fingers crossed that it does. I think that's the biggest thing to watch out for. And it looks like the third season of Konosuba is coming out. I haven't heard yet about where we're going with that, but I'm so stoked about that. And you can find me on Instagram. I haven't been involved at all with Instagram at all. And I'm just starting to get to the point where I'm like, hey, maybe this would be fun to like interact with people. And you can just my handle is my name. It's at Arnie Pantoja. And that's me.
Thank you so much for taking the time out to do this. This has been a wonderful conversation, and we gotta
Yeah.
get you back when more stuff clears and we can talk about it.
That sounds great. It was an absolute pleasure.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, you too.